So, since this course is principally concerned with the shamatha practice, we have emphasized in the northern tradition, do not strictly separate between the shamatha and the vipassana. It is the peculiarity of the northern tradition. Of course, they are not the same, but they are also not completely different. There is an intimate link between the shamatha and vipassana, and you start, since in this tradition the shamatha and vipassana progress is explained in the Yogacara. In this tradition, of course, as we have explained, you can combine them when you have the state of clear, what we have called prashrabdhi. Difficult word to translate. Our text translates as pliancy. But it is, we have explained, much more than just pliancy. It contains many things. Among others, clarity and relaxation. This clarity and relaxation is connected with lightness, smoothness, straightness. Your mind is flexible, so it is straight and also light. There are the two aspects of pliancy, because our body and the mind, they are not the same, but also not the different. They are closely interconnected. There is a story in Visuddhimagga, you will find also in the Mahabharata, the same. The story of the blind man and the cripple. We can only work when we have the blind man and the cripple together. If we only, who is a blind man? The eye. The eye does not see anything if there is no, it's not connected with the mind. So the body is like the eye. It does not feel anything if it is not connected with the mind. And again, the body cannot move. So body is a cripple if it is... the mind is a cripple, sorry, if it is not connected with the body, because the mind cannot move without the body. The prana is also part of the body. And the prana is what moves the mind. That's why in the southern tradition, among the seven all present factors, you have the mental mental energy. So energy has the material side, and the energy has a material side and also the mental side. This is very important to understand. Okay, sorry. So the mind is a cripple without the body, because it cannot move, and the body does not feel anything without the mind. so the two work together. How? The cripple sits on the shoulders of the blind man and tells him, go right, go left, go sit down. And this is how we work. They have to be coordinated. If they coordinated well, we are working well. If they not coordinated well, we are not working well. So that's why we do Qigong in order to coordinate them well. So to get into the state of prashabdi, you need shamatha training. And we have explained this shamatha training is explained in this tradition by nine abodes with the non-differentiated object. You have also the vipassana. Vipassana is based on the function of the applied and sustained attention. Shamatha is also based on the service of the sustained and of the applied and sustained attention, but they are different. In shamatha, they are oriented to the non-differentiated reflection in the mind. In vipassana, to the differentiated reflection. If you want to understand this text, it is very important to keep this in mind. And you can combine them according to your need, we have explained. And this is how it works. In yoga, also in this tradition, it is specially emphasized the importance of the experience of the non-thinking mind, amanaska. The non-thinking mind is a key to understanding how the mind functions, and it's also a key to understanding of the traditions in Northern Buddhism such as Zen and so on, and Dzogchen, Mahamudra. The experience of non-thinking mind is very important. So actually Abhidharma Samuchaya, which is the basic scripture of Abhidharma of the Northern tradition, based on Yogacara, explains that the real shamatha is when the mind does not move. And the vipassana is when the mind moves. You can combine the two. The mind will, in our conditioning, the mind will also move in the state of jhana, because we are very far from perfection. And this is where you investigate the emptiness of whatever is impermanent. And the ultimate reality is also emptiness because you cannot grasp it. So the ultimate reality is the non-self-existent nature. Non-self-existent nature is emptiness, it is the selflessness. This is the understanding which is emphasized in the Northern Buddhism. It does not oppose in any way the understanding you have in the scriptures of the disciples. It only can be very well taken as a complementary to that. Still, however you meditate, you have to study the objects of wisdom and understand the principle of the selflessness. Without that, there is no Buddhism. So now we want to bring the mind in the state of prashabdi, because in the state of prashabdi you can then, in the state of pliancy, in the state of clarity and relaxation, you can then bring the mind to the state of samadhi without thinking. And when the mind moves, you can go deeply into the study of vipassana. So in our text it is combined. You study these 16 exercises after understanding the objects of wisdom, the five aggregates, the dependent origination. Dependent origination explains nothing but the fact of impermanence being momentary. Whatever moves, moves momentarily. So even so, we can understand that we are getting old. We are not the same as we were 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 1 year ago. But the real impermanent, we also know that our sensations are changing. Sometimes we are happy, sometimes we are not so happy, sometimes we are even depressed. But this is also impermanence, but it is impermanence not enough to understand the dependent origination. The dependent origination means the arising of cause and effect in moment by moment. So the cause is not really separated from the effect, and the effect is not separated from the cause, as taught in Buddhism, in Visuddhimagga, same in Northern tradition. They are neither same nor different. And this is our condition. We live in an ungraspable reality, but we grasp at it. And this is our ignorance. It does not mean that when we understand this principle, we do not grasp. These energies are very deep. But when we see them, we can detach. And when we detach, whatever we can do in a better way, with more understanding. So for that, this training of shamatha, to bring this natural detachment, this is the aim of shamatha, rather than attaining the jhana. Because still in the jhana there will be fluctuations, and the real shamatha is a state free of fluctuations. That's why this tradition explained the aim of shamatha is the mind without moving. And this state of the mind without moving should be a natural state. so that when the mind moves, you still observe it as part of the natural state. So this training in the shamatha, let us go back to these nine stages. The first stage, we repeat, is placing the mind on the image that you use in meditation. The emphasis of this tradition is that actually all objects are mental images. Because without the mirror we don't see anything what is outside. And the mind functions like the mirror, mind functions like the space. In the space, anything can come, good things, bad things, beautiful, ugly, all comes into this space, all comes into this mirror, and it will be just reflected. Then the mental factors have the, which are the content of the moving mind, they have the function of work out with these images and bring them into definitive shapes, which then are the content of our thinking, or definitive forms rather. So this is a very interesting process, and indeed the investigation of the mind is the essence of the Buddhist practice. And the skillful means is, in this tradition, precisely to make actually the mind the only reality. It is not a dogma, it is, you can take it as a skillful means. So the beginning is now, if you're working with the breath, is to make this image of the breath in your mind and stay with that image. Actually, we have explained the real breath are the four elements, and they always changing. But what you observe in the shamatha meditation is not these changes of these elements, but that image that the mind holds of the breath. When you, that we have said, it's called the concept of the breath or whatever, or image, mental image of the breath. So that mental image, as this Yogacara tradition explains, is not the same as the breath, which is the four elements, especially the wind element, which is the synonym of the breath, because in breath the vibration, movement is most obvious, therefore it is wind element, but wind element cannot be separated from the other elements. So the wind is wind because it's always changing, it is always moving. But you don't follow this movement, you make the mental picture of it, and it is the mental image. So it is not the same as the wind, which is vibration, but it is also not different from this wind, which is vibration. Very wonderful thing, neither same, no different. That is a Buddhist logic. Cause and effect is also neither same, no different. The image of the wind, of the breath, of the anapana, of the bodily formations is also not the same as these elements, also not the different. That is why it is so important to bring the vipassana understanding together with the shamatha understanding. So that's why the text describes first these objects of wisdom, starting with the five aggregates, so that you don't try to catch the breath, don't try to hold the breath. But we still do it when we are beginners, because this is a very, very deep instinct. We want to catch, we want to dominate, we want to possess. And this brings frustration. So in the initial stages of meditation, because of this instinct, kind of animal instinct in us, we don't find the aim of shamatha is to find pure happiness. This is the aim of shamatha, not disturbed by defilements. But the initial stages, they don't bring any happiness because of this, what we have called the forceful attention, the forceful flowing of the mind towards the object, literally. This forceful attention brings frustration. But we have to experience at first this frustration, because we will not get rid of this animal instinct in us of dominating, catching, holding, grasping, unless we see that it is not beneficial. So despite of not being satisfied with just breathing in and breathing out, what is more fun than just relax and breathe in and breathe out? It sounds very simple, but it is not simple if we are not used to meditation and we are dominated by this habit of grasping. So one has to get frustrated from this habit of grasping in order to go deep into shamatha. According to Buddhist psychology, or kusala, developed kusala states of mind, wholesome states of mind, they have sankhara upekha. Sankhara upekha means the equanimity towards the mental formations, which make the mind balanced. Every wholesome mind should have this. Then it is really wholesome. Why? Because the process of samsara, according to dependent origination, starts by thirsting for sensation. The thirsting for sensation is the instinct of grasping, possessing. And that is a frustrating factor in our life. What to do? Become frustrated with wisdom. That's why Buddhism teaches we have to understand the how the touch leads to sensation, sensation to thirst, with wisdom. When we see it very clearly, what will arise from what we have learned yesterday will arise mindfulness. Mindfulness is what protects the mind. The Dhammapada says, Chitam Gutam Sukhavaham. Only when the mind is well protected, it can give happiness. One has to experience it in one's own body in order to be aware of it. And who protects the mind? The mindfulness does the job. also because we become frustrated by this forceful attention, it cannot bring any happiness into the mind. So the force of mindfulness, among others, this Yogacara tradition is really wonderful. It explains the process of shamatha and vipassana from so many different views. One can study whole life, will never be tired of it. You have 17 bases for understanding Buddhist yoga, shamatha and vipassana, and they are interconnected. And each explains the different functioning of the mind. So when we understand that the forceful attention, the process of going through these 9 stages until attaining the samadhi is also explained in this tradition by many, many different types of attention. The most important may be in shamatha, the 4 attentions. First you have a forceful attention in the first 2 stages. Then you have so-called sacchidra avahana. The mind flows to the object with ups and downs, which become less and less as you come closer and closer to samadhi. Now, they also do experiments with the yogis. They put electrodes. This is very fascinating. Then you can see yourself how this, when you closer to samadhi, these waves become less and less, until when you in samadhi, no wave appear at all. So this is precisely what the Yogacara Bhumi Shastra explains. The first, there is forceful attention, big waves. Then you start using the mindfulness, and the waves are less. Mindfulness leads to awareness, then you clean up the mind, then the waves become less and less and less. When mindfulness equalizes, when awareness and mindfulness equalizes the mind, then the mind flows effortlessly. Then that is called nishchidra. There are no more gaps, no more ups and downs. And when this nishchidra without gaps continues in the state of one-pointedness of mind, then you have samadhi. So the 4 stages of attention you can elaborate together with these 9 steps. Then these 9 steps remove 5 or 6 shortcomings in keeping the mind in the state of peace. And you need 8 samskaras, 8 mental formations and 6 powers to do that. So you have a different aspect of this training in shamatha. Very wonderful description. We can discuss some of it. So when there is a continuity in your effort to keep the mind on the image of the breath, on the concept of the breath, then what will happen? Then you will see that this forceful attention does not work. It does not work because when you work with forceful attention, there are these big waves disturbing the mind, which cause the excitement in the mind. And this excitement is what brings frustration, what brings worry, what brings depressions. You see it, so you want to avoid it. And the only way to avoid it is to activate the power of mindfulness. When the power of mindfulness is activated, this forceful attention will go away. So one has to be aware how, when mindfulness is there, everything flows more smoothly. When the mindfulness is not there, everything, they say in Japanese, mechakucha, everything is chaotic. Whatever we do, we jump here, we jump there, like wild horses. And in this state, no happiness can arise. And why all this happened? The Yogacara also describes very, very... Because we are lazy. So the laziness is the first enemy on the state of appeasing the mind. That's why this aspect of forceful attention, which shows you how you cannot be at ease with this forceful attention. So you have to have a strong motivation to get over it. So in order to overcome laziness, you need a conviction. In Buddhism, faith is called conviction. This is how is defined faith in Abhidharma. When you have faith, what will happen? You will practice vyayama. When you practice, despite having not comfort, then you may slowly get some understanding of what the pliancy actually is. It is not yet pliancy, but it is some insight into the pliancy. And that only comes when the power of mindfulness is activated and avoids this forceful attention. So this we have described, this is the third stage, which enables you to go back to the object whenever it loses clarity or when the mind is excited and thinks about something else. You never really lose the vicinity of the object. So you don't bring your mind back to the object by force, but by mindfulness. And this is a whole world of difference. So by mindfulness, the bodily movement, the speech and the mind become more smooth, and you start feeling it, so you get confidence. Because you get confidence, you practice more, and you get an inkling into what a real pliancy is. And then something more of pliancy really happens, but it is not yet a complete pliancy. When you are at the stage of not leaving the object of your attention, that is a fourth stage. Whatever, you may have many different sensations in the body, you may have different thoughts cropping up, but you don't leave already the object of your attention. So the mind gets settled. We have it stays on the object, not by force, but by mindfulness. So it is ready to clean up the mess. The mindfulness is the base for cleaning up the mess in the mind. If mindfulness is not there, we will not clean the mess in the mind. And in the fourth stage of shamatha, the mindfulness is firmly established. The object, as we have said, does not wobble. So we don't forget the instructions. The second mistake of the laziness is forgetting the instructions. That means forgetting your object, what you have to do with that object, how to stabilize it in the mind in order to get deep into the state of samadhi. So then the awareness will take care. Awareness is the condition for clarity and relaxation, for real pliancy. And we have explained, since you have the now concentration, but you don't have yet clear awareness, which makes the object clear. So because you have concentration but not yet clear awareness, so concentration is a deep mind which leads to thinking naturally. If you don't protect this stage, then you may stay in a quite little bit pleasant state, but the object is not clear, and the shamatha and vipassana can only happen with a clear object. But when the object is not clear, you will not get a real appeasement, and you will also not get a real vipassana. So when it is in the sixth stage that the object becomes very clear, pliancy comes to full expression, and there are no more tendency of thinking of the mind and excitement of the mind. So this is a wonderful cognition condition. This is called shamayati. He has appeased the mind, but while the mind is appeased, it still have the small fluctuations. When you have this conditioning of shamayati, then you can stay in meditation for a long, long time, feel very much at ease. You may have moments of one-pointedness, you can attain jhana, but after attaining jhana, still the fluctuations will be there, because these are the very deep habits. So that is why the emphasis is not so much on attaining the jhana, but on mastering the placing of the mind on the object. Jhana is only skillful means for helping us to attain that. But it is also very, very useful for vipassana. Even with our fluctuations. And that's why the Buddhist cosmology, if you have studied, is based on the higher stages of the cosmos, of the world, are based on the jhana perception. So you have the lower state of jhana, the middle state of jhana, and the perfected state of jhana. So you have the divinities, lower divinities, middle divinities, and higher divinities. In each and every jhana you have these three stages, because the cosmos is the reflection of the mind. By mind we are bound, by mind we are liberated. And Buddha explained the process of liberation, among others, by experiencing always more and more subtle objects, connected with more and more subtle sensation, more and more subtle mind, until the most subtle of all sensations, more subtle of all the object which is not the real object, and that is nirvana, that is suchness. The real object is object because you can grasp it, but it is not a real object because you cannot grasp it. Sanskrit is a wonderful language. The object in Sanskrit you call alambana, what means lamp, hang on. If the mind can, you can hang on the object, you can hang on something, it is an object. But you cannot hang the mind on nirvana, you cannot hang the mind on suchness. So it is the object, objectless object, whatever you call it. So, and it is the most subtle of the subtle of the subtleness of the objects. So from the gross you go to the most subtle. This is how you train in meditation. This is also explained in the Agamas. So training in meditation is training of in experience of more and more subtle object until the objects you cannot grasp. So we are in the state of appeasement. We have come here, we have come. So in the state of appeasement there are still fluctuations. It is not perfect, but it is close to the perfect. So the pliancy comes to full expression. So you can connect shamatha and vipassana according to your need. When the mind is sinking, you lose the clarity of the object. You differentiate your object. When the mind becomes excited, you stabilize it by not differentiating the object, keeping the same image in the mind. Until you get the perfection of placing the mind in, on the object. This is the aim of meditation. Samadhi, we have explained, literally means samadhana, the correct placing of the mind on the object. And this is the science of meditation. So it is in Yogacara very similar to yoga. Patanjali defines yoga as citta vritti nirodha, the cessation of the activities of the mind. It does not mean that the mind is not active when you become liberated. If we have no active mind, we will not find the door, we will not be able to do anything, but the placement will be in a perfect balance, always in the equanimity towards the formations. So now the fluctuations become less and less. So the next job is, this is the seventh stage, which is called Vyupashamati. View, vi has many, this prefix has many meanings. Here it means emphatic, very much appeased. How do you very much appease the mind? By making its effort equal. When the mind is sinking, you need to lift it up. When the mind is excited, you need to control it, right? To restrain it. So, same description you will find in Visuddhimagga also. So, you have to lift up the mind, gladden the mind. You have it also in your text. And you have to, when it is sinking, you have to lift it up, make the object clear again, put the light into the mind. And when it is excited, you have to restrain it. How do you restrain the mind? Yogacara Bhumishastra explains by practicing upeksha, practicing equanimity. But the equanimity never comes by itself, just as Visuddhimagga explains. When the mind is excited, you apply those factors of enlightenment connected with samadhi, which are the pliancy, prashabdi, or upeksha, the equanimity, and one-pointedness, samadhi. They will control this tendency of the mind to rise, to udacha. Audatyam means going up. The fluctuation is going up and down, up and down, up and down. Like the fish with moving with the tail. Flapping. Right? Flap, flap, flap. So, when flapping, going up, then you have to restrain it by the samadhi. And then when it is going down, what to do with that? You have to lift it by those factors which are connected with wisdom. What are the enlightened factors connected with wisdom? Dhammavichaya, the investigation of the Dharma. That's why here comes also the investigation of the five aggregates, dependent origination. Then by effort, virya, and gladdening the mind. And of course, all these, they are the factors of will. So according to the Yogacara Bhumishastra, this process of thinking of the mind, you avoid by chetana, by will, putting the will into the mind, power into the mind, effort into the mind. So either you let go or you make effort. Let go, make effort. So this is how you manipulate the mind to stay with the same effort, to reduce the fluctuation to none. And this process also in yoga, also in Yogacara, Bhumi Shastra, same in yoga, very wonderful. Hmm? This yoga tradition and Buddhism, they have an intimate link. There is a wonderful, you should not put the, if you go to India, I don't care much, but don't put the feet in front of the Dhamma speaker. But it's okay, you can do it. Here is America, but when you're in India, please avoid it. Then they will consider us barbarians. But here it's okay, no problem. So, this Vyupa Shamati is in the effort of the mind to reduce this tendency of thinking and excitement to minimum by making either effort or letting go. So, there are these wonderful terms in yoga called abhoga and anabhoga. Huh? Abhoga, anabhoga. Very difficult to translate because these yogis, they had such a deep understanding of the mind, which the psychology still is very far from dealing with. Bhuj, from the Sanskrit word bhuj, which means to bend. The process of cognition is process of bending the mind towards the object. Very wonderful. When you bend the mind, you enjoy the object. So abhoga is enjoying also. Unless you bend the mind to the object, you will not enjoy the object. So, and abhoga means to put effort in bending the mind towards the object, and anabhoga is being slack in bending the mind towards the object. So when you want to attain the perfection in the application of the mind towards the object, you must not bend it with too much effort, and you must not also bend it with too little effort, so that it flows equally. Very wonderful word. Abhoga, anabhoga. We always, it is our instinct, we always either do too much effort or too little effort. That's why we are not perfectly at ease. Please be watchful of that. See this very clearly. So this is here, the more subtle the object, the more subtle the sensation, the more subtle the mind, the more subtle the investigation. So when you avoid the abhoga, anabhoga, inequality, you can attain the one-pointedness of the mind. When this one-pointedness of the mind becomes a habit, you are in samadhi. So this training in not allowing the mind to think by putting in the will, as we have explained with all the other factors connected with wisdom, and by checking its tendency to be excited, by letting go, and all the factors of enlightenment connected with samadhi. So the mind will be in a perfect flow, effortless. When the mind is effortless, only then you get the real one-pointedness. So when the mind is effortless, you will get the Vyupashamayati stage, the seventh stage, which will lead to the stage of the one-pointed concentration, the eighth stage. Then, due to the habit of staying in one-pointed concentration, you will get the samadhi, the perfect application to the object. Very wonderful science. There is nothing quite like that. According to Asanga, according to the northern tradition, which emphasizes the path of the bodhisattva rather than the path of an arahat, the Asanga explained that the arahat the disciple finds final happiness in nirvana. The bodhisattva finds happiness in this training of shamatha, in the perfect application to the object, so he can face any kinds of situations and always learn with it, and get to the perfect mastery of the mind. So he does not need to struggle and learn with all kinds of circumstances, from all kinds of circumstances. But it's a very difficult training. Most of us, we want to be bodhisattvas, but we don't understand this training. It is very difficult. But it's worthwhile to try. And however we explain this training in perfect placing of the mind on the object is the most wonderful science you can find. So that much for today. We may then in the evening explain some other parts of this practice, how it is connected with this other aspects, these thoughts one is to overcome with the samskaras, the formations one has to develop, and the forces one has to use in order to make this training perfect. So that much for now. Now it's time to sit. I hope it will clarify more what we are learning. Then we will understand much better this text that we are studying now. Okay, so we have 15 minutes break and we just do it.